Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Tyler, there's a number of places we could begin discussing the show, but I'm going to start with Christian and Matt Hardy. Did they bring it tonight? Did they show everybody else in the locker room how it's done? Or by maybe there's a different way to interpret it, which is they're still talking to each other on national television in 2022. Why is so much TV time being devoted to especially Matt Hardy, many might say? I mean, Christian's certainly come on strong on his promos on the heel turn. So I'm trying to lay it out there objectively. I want to get your honest assessment of that segment.
Yeah, I thought it was just okay. I've been higher on the Christian heel turn than most, I would say. So take all that in context here. But it did not feel like a continuation of the character. The Christian character is kind of built over the two promos that we had seen. You know, him talking about Jungle Boy's dad and then doubling down on the falling one felt, you know, like a move. Like he inherited the MJF moniker of being the heel that's allowed to say whatever he wants to within the company. Only one person can, it would appear. So I thought this was more of a plateau week for him, and they didn't really explain the Luchasaurus thing, which I think was a bit of a flaw to bring that up and to not pay off on it, because it's not like people are wanting that a ton. But yeah, and then Matt Hardy, you know, it feels a little bit like the Jungle Boy stuff where you were just hitting the most obvious stuff to kind of, you know, get a reaction from the crowd. And it is like, it's the 2022 version of, you know, calling out the local sports team is by calling out what everyone knows about Jeff Hardy right now. And so, you know, it's happening multiple times in similar weeks is not the best writing. But yeah, with Matt Hardy, I would agree. That it's kind of curious why he's on TV so much and why he is essentially the big show of AEW, where he switches allegiances multiple times to fit what is needed and get people over and whatnot. So that's how I view him at this time. So, yeah, I mean, I thought the segment was fine, the weakest of the three Christian segments, but, you know, it led kind of to the tag team stuff. It was tangentially connected, but yeah, I thought it was just okay. I think Christian was strong in it, but beyond that, I don't know why Hardy's affected is in it.
Yeah, I mean, if they're setting up just Luchasaurus beating Matt Hardy, then this is good in the sense that, you know, they created a definite backstory for that match, which I hope is just sort of a TV blow-off. Or not a TV blow-off, but a kind of one and done, I guess a better way to put it. For a TV match and just, you know, give Matt something to talk about. And obviously Christian and Matt have a huge history and they're trying to play off of that. And, you know, the strategy might be let's draw some longtime WWE fans in by having these two familiar faces going at it. I think that can also backfire. And I'm sure it does backfire when AEW seems like they're living in the past and rerunning things instead of leaning forward. We got plenty of leaning forward elsewhere on the show. So on balance, I don't think it was, you know, anything that where someone's just going to watch this whole show and go, man, AEW's living in the past. I will say this, though. I thought Christian's body language since turning heel in the way he's carrying himself is really strong. I think he's been really good on the mic. I think he absolutely has gone for cheap heat, the, you know, oh, my God, I can't believe he just said that type of heat. And, I mean, I think he's gone there more than I would, and it does sort of – start, I think, to come across as I don't have anything else in my arsenal, so I have to go for the most obvious real-life cheap shots. Now, I know there's another perspective, and Christian's saying, hey, you know, we're just bringing reality into this, and I'm saying what I would say if this were real, and I think there's an argument for that. I think you got to pick your spots. Maybe this is one of the spots you can justify picking. But I will say this: if we set aside the fact that it might seem kind of dated, or you know, these two guys are still talking about each other in 2022, I do think they put on a bit of a clinic in terms of the delivery and the cadence, and you know, Matt entering the ring and how they reacted to each other. I don't think you'd watch this as a regular fan, even if you were skeptical of wanting to see this, and not be more interested in seeing Luchasaurus against Matt, or even Matt against Christian afterwards. So in that sense, it's mission accomplished. And obviously they're building towards Jungle Boy's return. And Matt Hardy's just a placeholder, or sort of a, you know, you go through him first before Jungle Boy returns. And so all in all, I give it a mixed review, but thumbs up. And I wouldn't have like nixed this if I was given the format sheet. That said, the bringing something that involved the DUI into a pro wrestling storyline for a heel to get heat, I think that's the part that I would just avoid. I think if it was more of an aside, or they just didn't hit so bluntly that point, maybe. I did get a kick out of, you know, saying that Matt might have been, turning a blind eye to his brother and his issues. Mm-hmm. You can ride his coattail for one last run. I think that rang pretty true. But I think, you know, Matt saying he regrets what he did with Private Party and Butcher and Blade, and that's what Christian is doing with Luchasaurus. I thought that was a good point. So I went to it first because I think there's a decent amount to talk about. And I think Christian turning heel is a pretty big angle right now in AEW, and we know how Tony Khan feels, or at least felt, about Christian Cage and his legacy in pro wrestling, and how excited he was to bring him in. And he obviously trusts Matt to come up with his own stuff. And so, yeah, mixed feelings, but a thumbs up overall, in part because I also do like Luchasaurus as a heel with Christian. I didn't expect that. And I do think they're setting up all of this, even if you think, why are Matt and Christian getting so much TV time? I think it's working to set up Jungle Boy against Luchasaurus and eventually Christian. So it's served a purpose beyond two 40-somethings trying to get, you know, one more promo in, brother, before their time is up.
Yeah, I agree. Just a quick couple points there. I mean, my MJF comment was kind of offhand, but I do feel that way, that Christian is kind of carrying that weight as that heel on the roster, which can carry TV segments. And I think Jungle Boy and Christian is set up for a pretty important match at the All Out pay-per-view. So you have to kind of extend that. And I think this did a good job there. So I've liked Christian's turn a lot. And I just thought this is the weakest of the three, if you look at all three, yeah, you know, Christian heel segments. So that was my only critique in a vacuum, but I still can think it'd be pretty good. And I didn't have the feeling of here's two old washed up WWE guys on my TV screen, because as you said, the rest of the show, I mean, Jericho was on a TV, you know, bit, and Moxley's not washed up. But besides that, it felt very AEW young-ish talent focused to me tonight.
Yeah. I think there was a good amount of positive small things and some big things on this show. It was a mixed bag overall for me, but I as the show mm-hmm. was progressing and even as it ended, I think it started strong and ended strong. There was a little bit in the middle where I think there's some stuff to pick apart, but this had some of that elbow grease, some of that pizzazz, some of that reflecting on what happened in the past instead of just jamming a bunch of stuff in moving forward. And so that was a positive. I love the video package on Blood and Guts, and you know, looking back mm-hmm. at that and using that to set up what they wanted to do with Eddie Kingston and Chris Jericho. So that was good. I think they did a nice job with producing the vignettes, and I think the content in most cases was good, and the delivery in most cases was good. So I thought that this was in the top third of Dynamites in terms of the format and the pacing and the mix of promos, video packages, and matches that I think it's in kind of that sweet – it's, I don't say sweet spot, but it's in the top third in terms of the balance of what I think mm-hmm. appeals to the most people and serves the booking and what the wrestlers are trying to do the most.
I would broadly agree. I think I liked the first hour, 15 or so, and then the end of the show kind of tapered out. I mean, obviously the last match was what it was, I think. You know, knowing who's going to win for sure, I mean, as most AEW Dynamite matches are, hurt it a little bit for me, but it was still some good action. So, yeah, I would broadly agree with your point there.
Yep. All right. Well, let's pause and introduce the show. We have a lot more to talk about on tonight's show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, July 6, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, one of the original dirt sheets, as it is sometimes called, both in a positive and negative way over the decades. I've been covering pro wrestling since the late 1980s full time. And I thank you for joining us today. And hopefully you're checking out my live TV coverage on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday nights, covering Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, and all the great content that Zach Haydorn and the whole team put together on pwtorch.com. We also have an active YouTube channel, and we'll talk a little bit more about that than usual tonight because the other voice you hear is Tyler Sage, a pwtorch.com contributor, pwtorch VIP podcast host, and a big part of pwtorch's YouTube channel. Tyler, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Hey, it's great to be here, and always a good time. Always fun chatting with you and all the Torch listeners out there.
So, Tyler, take just a few seconds to push people towards subscribing to and watching daily new content on the PW Torch YouTube channel.
Yeah, so daily content is keep you. We're gonna get you what you need to know for that day. If you're don't want to spend all day on Twitter trying to digest all the wrestling news, we do that in about a 5-minute format for you. As you mentioned, Zach Haydorn, who helps run the webpage with you, Wade, me and him do a weekly show called the Fireside Chats, where we talk about the biggest stories in wrestling and give our take on it on video. So if those of you that prefer to watch a video podcast or a video show, you can do that. And then as we did this past Saturday, Zach and I did a watch along throughout the entire WWE Money in the Bank show, which is a great time. So if you want some second screen experience, or if for some reason you don't want to listen to someone like Michael Cole or Corey Graves do commentary, you can listen to Zach and I break down the show and talk about it. And you can join the chat and join us there. So that was a great time. We're going to definitely continue doing that. So writing it out from there, but yeah, just another way to get in touch with us here at the Torch. And yeah, would appreciate you joining, subbing, and if we hit 100,000 subscribers, I did say that hopefully a wrestler or someone that we hand select will do the wood skewers spot to me that we saw at the Blood and Guts match last week. So we're at about 3,000 subscribers as of July 6, 2022. So if we get to 100,000, we'll film that spot and have a good time with it.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's get on with the show and continue to talk Dynamite here. We have so much more from the show to talk about, and we'd love you to join us. The number is 347-215-8558. Give us a call if you want to give your thoughts on tonight's program, ask us a question, or add some editorial comments. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that'll play you on the switchboard. It's a short line tonight for calls. So if you sometimes shy away from calling because you just don't want to wait in line, this is a good time to push 1 or call us if you haven't yet. You can also email us, as always, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right. Well, let's get rolling with the show, and let's go to our first call. Derek in Utah is up first. Derek, welcome. Thank you for calling. What is on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Well, my talking points were very similar to yours, Wade. I think they slowed things down tonight, especially in the middle of the show. I love the recap of Blood and Guts. And they actually got back to telling some stories with a combination of both wrestling and talking segments. And I think that's a good mix. And I also, much like you, I appreciated that the show started strong with something that felt big and notable, and that it also ended strong with something that felt big and notable. Just a few gripes. One kind of piggybacks on your guys' comment about Christian. And I love Christian. He's kind of one of my longtime underrated favorites because I always thought he was underappreciated. So I'm going to have a bias to love everything he does. And with that said, I didn't and have not liked the way he's approaching his angle with Jungle Boy. I mean, a lot of wrestling fans, they like to throw out that phrase, getting cheap heat. And I don't mind cheap heat, and I never have, probably because I'm cheap myself. So I don't mind if it's cheap, but it shouldn't appear desperate. And I think what he's going for now when he makes the comments about DUIs or your dead family or whatnot, to me it's not cheap. It just seems desperate. So that's where I kind of draw the line, is it's begging for a negative response, and you shouldn't have to beg if you truly are that good on the mic. And so that's kind of my perception of it. Your thoughts on that?
Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a case-by-case with the Christian stuff. It seems to be a pattern now with his character. I'd like to see him just elevate above this a little bit next time he interacts with somebody, just to show kind of the next level of, you know, James Bond villain type heel that I think he's going for, at least with his wardrobe. And, you know, the stuff with Jungle Boys, you know, talking about, you know, talking about Luke Perry, you know, I think, you know, I was okay with that on the whole. If that's the only time in Jungle Boys' career that gets brought up, if it's not every feud that he has with a heel, that's when it's going to be a problem. So, you know, it's a guy he's been with and it makes sense and all that stuff. So I was okay with it if it's ever going to happen, for it to happen there. But if he's just going to, you know, bring out the worst thing that anyone he's ever interacted with has done and bring it out on the forefront for the live audience, I think that's a plateauing of the character. And I don't think he'll do that. He's a pro for a reason, and he's you know, showing his heel promo skills in this role. So I think he will improve. That's why at this point I'm not too concerned about it. But, you know, if we see 2-3 more promos similar with different people, I think it's something to be concerned about for sure.
I think, too, it might reflect on Tony Khan's booking negatively if heels are coming out there and feel that they don't have enough to talk about regarding the stories told on the air and have to go to the real-life stuff and ripping on the city in, you know, like shoot stuff. And I'm not saying that's necessarily the case here, because I think there is a trail of stuff that Christian and Jungle Boy went through, hints of Christian turning. But I don't know. But sometimes the heel going for cheap heat is like, what do I got to work with here? And I mean, I think Christian has more to work with than that, though. Maybe he's selling the storyline short, or just thinks this is what we do these days to get heat, and he just disagrees with some of our criticism of it. But I mean, I want to hear more about his relationship with Jungle Boy. I want to hear more about coaching Jungle Boy and why Jungle Boy let him down and do so in a petty way, you know, where you're like, I'd rather boo somebody because he has petty reasons for turning against Jungle Boy, not because he's willing to go there on a promo and shoot, brother. Like, just talk about the relationship with Jungle Boy and be a dick, you know? And I want a little bit more about Luchasaurus and create a little bit more of a backstory to why Luchasaurus went with him. I'd like to see Christian stick, if not exclusively, at least a much higher percentage of callbacks to past matches and you know, where Jungle Boy, he thinks Jungle Boy disappointed him or disrespected him, and focus more on that, but do so in a dickish way, you know, where in the end you're just like, oh, I want to boo this guy. So I hope they steer away from it. I know it was just, you know, easy pickings with Jeff. If Matt's out there, how do you not talk about Jeff? And how do you not talk about Matt being a hypocrite if he's criticizing Christian for – well, but that's the good stuff. Like, criticizing Matt for being a hypocrite criticizing Christian for exploiting Luchasaurus was the strength of the promo, because that was more storyline-based. So, yeah, I mean, as I talk it through, I just think in this case, just Christian should pull from the past and talk more about Jungle Boy. Derek, back to you.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, Christian's delivery, as you guys noted, is great. I mean, his presentation, yeah, you can tell he's a real pro. He knows where the cameras are. He knows how to interact subtly. Yeah, exactly. He knows how to interact subtly with Tony and others. And even the way he dresses is just kind of like, okay, this guy thinks he's quite special. I'm just saying, if you're that good at your delivery and that much of a pro, you shouldn't have to pick the low-hanging fruit, because
yeah,
any barely any barely educated internet troll can tell a terrible joke about Jeff Hardy's DUI. Anybody can do that. And it will get a negative reaction every time. So be better than that. And my second gripe on the show, and it's kind of a gripe with the wrestlers, but more of a gripe with the live audience, is I really did not like the Rush and Pentagon match, pretty much because there was one spot in the middle that ruined it for me, and that's when they were trading headbutts and knees and slapping the hell out of their legs and barely touching each other and pretty much missing, blatantly missing. And the fans are chanting and cheering for it. And in my opinion, I just look at it and I say, if pro wrestling, the whole is the illusion of violence. And if you have no illusion of violence besides sound effects, you're not very good at your craft. And if you're not doing a very good job at your craft, the fans should not cheer you. And so when the fans, they did like these headbutts that were awful with leg slaps that make it that much worse. And then a knee strike that's not even close. And then they lay on the ground and the fans start chanting, this is awesome, and saying this is great. And it drives me crazy because that's not good pro wrestling. And fans should not cheer bad pro wrestling. And I think my biggest gripe with AEW, and I like the product and have grown to like the product more as they've expanded their roster, but the fans give them too much of a pass for stuff that's not good. And we should expect better, because if we expect better, they'll rise to the occasion. If we accept stuff that's not good as good, then what is the incentive to improve? Because to me, that's bad. And I think I'll just leave you guys on that. You guys have a great night.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate it, as always. Tyler? I mean, I agree with Derek. That said, in defense of the fans in the building, so maybe I'm disagreeing a little bit, but I agree with his sentiment overall. But, you know, not every fan has a good angle on what's going on. And so, you know, maybe the fans who had a good angle are like, oh, rolling their eyes, this sucks. But people who didn't have a good angle on some of that stuff, you know, which is a lot of fans from a greater distance without 4K, you know, 4K camera angle aimed right at showing the light in the moves is you know, some of them are cheering because they just are watching the selling. But I do think AEW fans, and it's something AEW has a lot of goodwill that shows up. And that goodwill is, it can be spent over time. But right now, you know, Rush and Penta have credibility and they're world travelers and they're, you know, favored because of their resumes and not being ex-WWE guys too. And so I do think fans are either more forgiving or just, you know, kind of like, wow, this is great. We got to see this sort of dream match. But it can, I think there are people out there, and this is, again, for Tony to reach, yes, the second million, he has to make sure he's not in an echo chamber with the first million. And make sure that if you've got a crowd going bananas for something, I mean, first of all, that's great. A crowd has been an important, you know, sixth man or whatever you want to call it for AEW all along when they have a good red hot crowd. It helps the product, but it can hurt the product too if it's validation that everything is perfect and it's validation that everybody that you're just going to grow if you continue to do this. And it's hard to be in that position if you're Tony Khan and watch crowds going nuts for stuff and go, but are we doing everything we can to grow? And I, you know, my analysis is through the lens of, you know, what is AEW doing to retain the audience they have, but also grow, as opposed to, you know, other ways of covering it, which is, I thought this was my favorite segment and I love this guy. Like, that's not really what, you know, how I approach it most of the time in my analysis. And that's where my concern is. And Derek points out one, you know, small specific moment that I think is emblematic of that continuing to be a concern that I have sometimes with Tony's booking. And frankly, I think we could have used more. This is one of those matches too, Tyler, where it's like Excalibur's catching people up on the backstory. And I want more homegrown storylines that in AEW. It doesn't mean you can't have a passing reference or build a stronger foundation on something, but when it's the entirety of why you should care is something that has never happened on AEW television before, I think they get into trouble with their TV viewers doing that. So Tyler, your thoughts on any of that?
I agree. Yeah. So I'd say I agree with you on the point it live and in person. You know, it's for me, I assume for most people too, it's a lot easier to, you know, just disassociate a little bit with your critical eye when you're there in person. And like you said too, like those slaps are not as easy to see when you're not in the first row of that crowd. And you can just kind of suspend your disbelief a little bit more when you're there watching it live and it's loud and you're like, oh man, was that actually a headbutt? Things like that. So, but in general, in that match, I agree. I think first, you know, to go micro, they need to stop pulling Penta's mask off every match. I do not think that is a winning recipe for all his matches. But yeah, on the crowds themselves, yeah, it's a catch 22, right? I mean, like you said, they bolster some segments that maybe shouldn't be bolstered, and that helps potentially get people over. I think there was a segment that was added to this card that, you know, in a vacuum, really no one in that group should get over for what they've done in the ring, but they've gotten over with their character work and the crowds behind them. So that's a positive of a hot crowd that likes most things. But yeah, also you get an echo chamber and it's hard to, you know, pull the plug on something that's not working over time. And you just have to know, you know, be confident in your booking and what is going to grow the product and have that mindset. And, you know, I think we can agree that that is maybe not the main priority most of the time. And, you know, with some things like tonight, the video packages, the replay of Blood and Guts and some of the slower pacing, I think, is to help bring in that new viewer and to expand the audience. And some things are not like this match. So it's, you know, it's a little bit of everything, and I think it'll get worked out. But we shall see. I also, you know, if no one else talks about Roosh tonight, I'm very curious what someone – if this is the first time they've seen a Roosh match, what their impression was. Because I have my thoughts. I'm sure you do as well, Wade, but I'm just curious kind of what people's thoughts on Roosh were. And if you have any beyond, you know, what you saw tonight.
Well, Tyler, tell people your thoughts on Roosh and his background. I know you wrote about it in your report, but,
yeah.
And also, you know, how would you introduce him and utilize him if you're Tony Khan, and because it feels like he's not just going to be, you know, an ROH guy the way that they told the story tonight. So, you know, what do you think about Roosh, and how would you be introducing him to get the most out of him?
Yeah, so I don't want to leave the audience, but my personal take on him was, you know, I covered ROH for a long time. Really, his entire run within Ring of Honor before it dissolved, I was covering it for the Torch, and I was very, very bullish on him when he first came in. I thought he had the potential to bring ROH into a new stratosphere, which is, you know, not saying much for that era of Ring of Honor from a viewership standpoint. But I soured on him fairly quickly. I think his in-ring stuff is kind of what you saw tonight, is what I'm going to think is what you're going to see over and over and over and over again with him. He works kind of a similar style that you saw tonight. So if you didn't like it, you probably will not like him going forward. And he does not like to put people over, which is a problem in my opinion for most wrestlers. in his spot is going to be a problem. But if I were Tony Khan and I had faith in him as a bigger star, maybe a second to Andrade or potentially something you could set up there, yeah, I would just set up and not have Excalibur talk about him, who his family is. If you're not going to bring in his family, if you are going to bring in his family, maybe mention, you know, his brother Dragon Lee was mentioned by relation, his father Bestia was not mentioned, Bestia del Ring, and so if you're going to tell that story, tell it. And if you're going to talk about Los Ingobernables, you know, the time to do it was during Forbidden Door and the build up there, and in some of those matches leading up that those guys couldn't work. So it just depends on, like, if he's going to be a big deal, he needs a Blood and Guts recap type segment. And, you know, like Miro gets almost week in and week out. I think it helps his character when he doesn't wrestle consistently. It helps him stay in the forefront. And it's more of, you know, where is this guy? Is he a top six guy? Is he a top 12 guy? Is he a top whatever guy? And just having a plan within AEW to, you know, define that. And I think that's kind of more my problem with, you know, guys like him, Andrade, Malakai Black, Darby, you can kind of go down the list of guys on that mid-tier and maybe below, maybe above, that I think are not well-defined, and they disappear shows for weeks on end. So I kind of added more problems than what your original question was there. But if you want him to be, you know, an important guy, you need to, like you said, not describe his whole character with Excalibur trying to battle JR, saying that they've wrestled a ton of times and all that stuff. You know, that's just human nature. You need to, you know, when he comes in, have a story you have for him to tell, and not just throw this together and tell the story in the ring. It makes him feel like, you know, like Tommaso Ciampa is on WWE's main roster, where he's at a certain position and, you know, he's never going to be kind of above that. And don't just start him here and then randomly elevate him, or have him win 5 matches in a row and then battle Wardlow and have a kind of a no finish there. So, I guess, you know, I kind of have negative thoughts on Roosh and on the booking of that tier within AEW. And this is my concern, is that over the next couple of weeks, it's going to be flourished. You know, both my negative opinions about both these things are going to happen. I just hope they don't. So I'm trying to again, not lead everybody, but that's kind of my worry coming in the coming weeks with Roosh.
This is one of those cases where I just, you know, I hope Tony has done his due diligence on the politics of Roosh and you know, the difficulty that you know, the reputation he has and the difficulty of working with him. And, you know, is it really worth it, you know, to add him to the mix, because it'd be cool to have Excalibur talk about their history, you know, and have this match that the crowd goes bananas for. Like, it felt, you know, this was kind of the start of a little bit of a drop off for me in terms of how it felt about the show. I want to ask you, speaking of which, about kind of a drop off in the show, when they pivoted to now promoting the July 23rd ROH pay-per-view. And like the beginning of the show, it's like, okay, Wardlow, all right, great. You know, TNT title win. And then Christian and Matt, and you know, it's building up Luchasaurus and eventually a Jungle Boy. All right, good. And then a tag team match. And there's a little detail in the tag match where Blade is telling Butcher, no, top 5, you know, don't get disqualified. We want to be contenders. I like that. And the announcers drew attention to it. You're making the title seem important by doing that. But the right team won, Strickland and Lee. And then you have the Young Bucks show up in person in front of a crowd and cut a promo and you know, play their character. I didn't love everything about their promo, but there was some good stuff there. And then you have Eddie Kingston, you know, being Eddie. And he does a callback or makes a reference to Wardlow winning the title earlier. And I love that. That, again, having people talk about the champion, that's something Tom Martin has talked about. Talk about the championship. Talk about the champion when there's a title change. Have other wrestlers mention it. Don't have everything be on an island that you could shuffle the segments and no one would notice. So there was good stuff. And then we got the Dark Order, which, you know, I'm sure we'll get to. The Rouge match that we talked about. And then a angle that felt a bit rushed with Acclaimed and Gun Club, where the audience didn't quite know how to react. The women's tag match, and then a strong main event, and a few things in the mix. But among those few things in the mix during that second hour was that pivot to now talking about Ring of Honor and this pay-per-view with Samoa Joe and Jay Lethal and FTR defending the tag titles against the Briscoes. And they're talking about that on Dynamite at a time when we just got past Forbidden Door. And now it's like, good, we can just start building characters and storylines that are ECW-centric. And then I'm reminded, oh, that's right. You know, we're going to spend the next couple of weeks also talking about this brand that's never been explained to the AEW audience in terms of, you know, in canon, like, what is ROH? You know, why is it being talked about as sort of the sub promotion within AEW? What's its place? Why does Tony Khan own it? How is it different? Why are some wrestlers in both and some only in one or the other? They haven't explained any of it. And at a time when I just want AEW to focus on AEW and the stories that they're going to be telling towards All Out, now it's going to be a couple weeks of let's wedge in references to a bunch of other titles where it's belts for everybody and a promotion without a context and without an explanation for why it's happening. And so I got kind of down on things at that point, even though, you know, there was some good stuff in the mix of this. It was just like kind of a downer that's right. Now we're going to plug Rampage, next week's Dynamite, and the ROH pay-per-view. And it just starts to feel like homework to keep track of it all, I think, for a decent portion of the audience. Tyler, agree, disagree, anything to add?
Yeah, I agree. And I think mine was even more my disappointment, my realization tonight watching the show along the same lines of when the Jay Lethal and Samoa Joe match got confirmed. That was kind of the hard push started there, was the realization that AEW is now a, you know, 10 pay-per-views a year company. If you take the ROH, Forbidden Door, and then the four quote-unquote AEW pay-per-views. And that was, you know, I guess it's more of a broader view of the company. But I, you know, when it started, AEW having four pay-per-views made it feel special, made it feel different than, you know, the WWE. And that was important for me as a fan. And now it just feels like there's a new pay-per-view every month and they're, you know, winding into that WWE Major League. You know, it has been Major League, but not in the way as a fan personally that I liked it. Now, that doesn't mean that it's bad because I personally don't like that the company's going to be promoting a pay-per-view every month. All the same things you're saying there with just everything being really good. I mean, like I said, the first hour and 15 minutes, everything you said, it felt like, you know, Tony's picked the guys, you know, at least the baby faces and, you know, with Christian the heel that to focus on in the coming months and who to build and the stories to tell and have it be a nice crescendo for all these people at All Out. And you can kind of already see where it's going and it's not going to feel rushed and put together. And then you have this, which yeah, is homework. It's just the faster that ROH can be its own thing, I think the better. It made me also think of, you know, what if, you know, Bron Breakker and Cameron Grimes stuff was kind of getting thrown every week on Raw and it would kind of get confusing. And, you know, I don't know if I would have had that opinion 2 years ago, but now I kind of feel that way that it's nice that things are kind of in their own universes within the company. And, you know, unless you're going to do an ROH hour on Dynamite every so often, it's kind of branded the same way and you tell the story, then I think it needs to be separated. And, you know, if FTR are on Ring of Honor to get eyeballs over to that, to start the, you know, that promotion, that's fine. But yeah, it's too much all at once. And I really enjoyed last week's episode of Dynamite because it was a refresh after Forbidden Door and all of that, which I've made my opinion well known on how that went. And this felt like a step back in that way, that we're juggling too many things. And, you know, if people like you and I are having trouble keeping dates of when things are, you know, that's tough. I mean, I'm going to the Columbus show in August. I assume you're going to the Quake at the Lake in Minneapolis. And I almost forget when it is because of so many dates thrown at me within AEW and all that stuff. So yeah, I agree with you. This is my long answer.
There are no earthquakes in Minnesota that anyone notices. And Target Center is near the Mississippi River, not a lake. Unless you count, you know, a chain of lakes that are about 3 miles away that isn't a single lake. It's a chain of lakes. And if we refer to the lake, it's usually Lake Superior, and that's a few hours away from Minneapolis. So it's a dumb name, and they need to talk to somebody from the state that they're about to do a show nickname on before they just irritate people like me with a dumb name like that. So
well, it was like Bash at the Beach at Cleveland in February. So
yes. I mean, their heart's in the right place. The execution is not impressive. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't like your main point. I know that, but I had to
I know it's fine. That's why I said it. I wanted you to I know that would that's hard.
Yeah. If in the end there's, you know, some larger purpose to, you know, introducing ROH to the AEW audience and Tony thinks this is the best way to do it, and in, you know, 3 or 6 or 9 or 12 or 18 months we look back and go, okay, this worked out fine, but it doesn't mean they're not deserving of criticism in the meantime, because it's clunky and it's getting in the way of just watching, you know, a show where everything is canon. Like if it's not on Dynamite, fill us in. If you're filling us in a lot, maybe more stuff should be on Dynamite. You should, you know, concentrate on you know, fewer storylines on Dynamite. You can have stuff going on exclusively on Dark. I mean, that's fine. You know, there's been WWE main event angles, the WWE Saturday Night when I think Jimmy Hart was booking it during the Nitro era and Dusty Rhodes was booking it. They had their own practically sub-promotion going on that just had its own stuff. And that's fine. You can do that. But don't then randomly introduce it onto the major show and either assume people know or perhaps even worse, try to catch them up with Excalibur speed talking his way through it in a way that just complicates things and muddies the water. But I want AEW to focus on AEW and pick out their top acts and have, you know, it just be more coherent and cohesive. But, you know, he bought ROH and that's where we are. And I don't think it's going to, you know, change. I mean, I think this is going to be what we have to get used to. I want to give out the phone number again, encourage people to call. Our number is 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That will signal to us that you want to be brought onto the show. Greg in Kansas City did that, and so we'll bring him on next. Go ahead, Greg. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight about Dynamite?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you remembering me. It's been a little while.
Sure, yeah.
I just thought I'd join in this conversation as somebody who is not a regular follower of either New Japan or Ring of Honor, that I very much can understand the viewpoint and that mindset of, like, you know, of all of this promotion that's going on. And I look at it from the mindset of, and I'm not the only person, this is far from an original opinion, that this roster is so loaded with talent, and there are so many people that you have that, during the build to the Forbidden Door, you're bringing in all these new people that, like, the hardcore fan base that's already going to buy tickets and is already invested in spending money and wanting to be as much of a part of the show as possible is going to love and eat up. But, I mean, you saw what some of that build did to the rating. And then now you're doing another show where you're bringing in new people and you are incorporating them somewhat into the show. But it's like, I mean, so far, what, you've had your, Gresham. I mean, he's going to be on Rampage this Friday. But there's just not enough time and there's so many people and you just... For me, like, I don't need a crash course into everything that ever happened, like, in Ring of Honor or in New Japan. As somebody who is a creature of habit, those products are not easily accessible to me. I have not kept up with over the years. And I feel like it somewhat takes away from some of the talent that you've invested in as far as, like, the people that you really have a vested interest in watching. Like, I mean, you've got Miro. He's going to be working with Malakai Black, but I feel like it could be so much more than it is. And I don't know if the ROH New Japan focus is taking away from that, but it's just something that for me, like, and this is also the question, is AEW looking to grow or is it just looking to continue to feed to the same fans that are already invested in it? And I don't think that this, far be it for me to be an expert on this, but I sense that that might not be a strategy for growth. But I'd have to imagine I'm not the only person to feel this way. It feels like I'm in the minority sometimes online, but I'm just not, as somebody who's never been traditionally a connoisseur of these products, it's like I kind of get alienated. And it was hard for me to get into the Forbidden Door show because there's just so many things that, like, I'm not privy to or overly understanding of.
Yeah, and I'm not against super serving a core audience who are spending money on your shows. And, you know, they are super serving their ticket-buying audience. They did good numbers for Forbidden Door on pay-per-view, you know, past my estimate when you work in not just traditional pay-per-view buys, but other types of ordering. And it's going to, you know, it's going to be a success, and there's going to be another one probably based on the number of buys. That said, I still am thinking Greg is not an exception. He's not. I think there's a lot of Gregs out there who are not as energized and invested in the product as they could be if AEW did a better job focusing on AEW. Or telling picking the stories that are worth telling from outside and telling the story better. And part of this, I just feel like, well, eventually we're going to get past all of Tony Khan's, you know, teenage 20-something dream matches and dream scenarios, and he'll sort of settle in and just, you know, captain a ship that's you know, secure in itself and focused on AEW itself. And he needs to get it out of his system. But I don't know how much longer it's going to be before that happens. I don't know. So, Tyler, anything you want to add to what Greg said?
Yeah, I mean, I think everything in life is about balance is a good way to look at this. And you know, if you have a couple of segments or however you want to view it, that is for, you know, your hardcore audience, it's a wink, it's a nod, it's maybe a cool matchup, and you know that audience knows what's going on. You know, I think again of Roosh who made his in-ring debut tonight, and just even if he switched and just did, again, not to compare anything to WWE, but like if you had introduced him with a video package or a promo the previous week that this is just a super athletic, badass guy who is friends with Andrade, he's going to come in and beat up Pentagon for, some reason, state the reason, like you're setting up a Rampage match. He came in and they had that match. I think it'd be way more successful for A, people who don't know who someone like Roosh is, and then B, someone like me who does and thinks maybe this will be a rebranding of that character and give him another chance. So I think, it's not a one size fits all approach, but you just have to, you don't also have to introduce every character and give their whole backstory and make people feel like there's no way they can catch up on this. And, it's not like you're starting on book three of the Lord of the Rings and you haven't read the first two, you don't know these characters. You don't know why things are important. And someone has given you a minute and a half spiel on why this person is why this ring is important and all that stuff. Psychologically, there's no way you can latch on and enjoy the product as much as, it needs to be, you need to be able to merge into traffic, and that's hard to do, but they need to do a better job of that, obviously.
I'd have rather have seen Roosh on Dynamite tonight, just destroy Fuego del Sol and, and have a vignette nicely put together, can be, 20 seconds or 45 seconds that talks about who he is. What does he stand for? What is his character, so to speak? And you could even have, if you put him in there against, again, I'm just saying Fuego, it could be Matt Sydal, could be Colt Cabana, could be Sean Dean, whoever, but he beats somebody up and shows off his signature moves. And then, a little bit later, you could have an Eddie Kingston Wardlow moment, where a wrestler says, hey, before I get to that, it could have been FTR, before I get to our business, Cash could say to Dax, what do you think of Roosh being here, man? And then react however they naturally would, that's, that guy's going to make some waves around here. Just a little aside like that, you build up to it. And if that happened this week or if it happened last week, and then you do a couple more things with them and then you have this match, now you feel like you know what the stakes are. And it's not just about high spot. This is awesome. Fight forever, whatever. But I will say in defense of the show, if they were healthy, they were on the show. We talk about how deep AEW's roster is, but, a lot of people are out injured right now. CM Punk and Danielson and Kenny Omega and Jeff Hardy and who knows about MJF's future, Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly I don't know if they're both hurt right now. But everybody else was on it. Chris Jericho. It wasn't like he didn't do his ring entrance, didn't have a match, but he was on the shows. I guess Sammy Guevara didn't really do anything. But you had Miro, you had Christian Cage, Malakai Black, Scorpio Sky, Ethan Page with him, Luchasaurus, Ricky Starks, Powerhouse Hobbs, Danny Garcia, Jay Lethal, Jake Hager, Satnam Singh, Brody King. There's very few people on the heel side of AEW who weren't on this show. Those are singles wrestlers. And then you have, tag teams and they had the Young Bucks come out there and they had FTR and you had Bones and Caster and the Guns doing their thing. And Matt Menard and Angelo were part of that tremendous video package. And Keith Lee and Strickland had a match. And Trent Reznor and Chuck Taylor were in a backstage segment. Private Party was referenced. Bear Country was in a match. Butcher and Blade were in a match. There are not many people, and I'm just looking at the heel side of things and the tag team side. Not many people were left out. You look at the babyface side of things, John Moxley, Hangman Page, Eddie Kingston, Wardlow, Claudio, Jungle Boy was referenced, but he's selling right now, building up his return. Samoa Joe, Orange Cassidy. The biggest name who wasn't on the show or even referenced was Darby Allin and Sting and Pac. But Wheeler Yuta was. Danhausen had a spot. Darius Martin were not mentioned, but that's kind of the end of the first and second tier of AEW's baby faces. And after that, there was no Dustin and no Brock Anderson, but that's fine. So they actually did utilize almost everybody that's healthy on their roster on the show. And so it's, say, well, who would you be pushing instead? It's like, no, I just slow things down and I would tell the stories with new people differently and more patiently. But we saw what they have to offer tonight in terms of who's healthy. When you do consider the fact that, Punk and Danielson and Omega and Cole are hurt, among others. And so this was a good glimpse at who they have to work with. And I just think there's, you know, the issue isn't so much not featuring AW guys well, because I thought that was the strength of this show. It's the other stuff that gets wedged in that muddies it and gets in the way. Although, you know, and hopefully we'll get to it, the Acclaimed and the Gun Club was kind of, you know, sloppy, and I think they could have done a better job building up the women's tag. Let me throw back to Greg, because Tyler, you and I both had a lot to say there. Greg, back to you for any follow-up or another topic.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about these kind of discussions is that you can have point counterpoint and exchange thoughts, and really thought provoking. It's a very nuanced conversation. Now, none of us have all the answers. There's a lot of shades of gray to all of this that we discuss, and you know that is a very strong counterpoint. And I guess in terms of the maybe I'm too used to the WWE mindset of like everybody has to be on TV every week, and so maybe there is a finding a counterbalance between like going back to the old maybe the way it was in the 80s and 90s of you get a squash match on TV once a month versus being on TV every single week. And maybe there is a strength to that, and that's something I think that could potentially be figured out over time, because one of my concerns with this roster is that as loaded and as talented as it is that it's going to, that over time, like, you will inevitably start to, I would imagine you'll inevitably start to have people dissatisfied for whatever reason about where they're at on the card or how they're being used or how they're not being used. And so it'll be interesting over time. And, I mean, all we can do is sit by and basically just watch and try to analyze. And I think it's – I don't envy you for all the work you do, but, I mean, it is quite a profession to cover all the ins and outs of as intensely as you do.
Well, Greg, I appreciate your comments. Anything else you want to add?
And that's it. Thank you. I'm about done.
All right, great.
You.
Thanks. Yeah, perfect. All right, you can follow Greg on the phone lines if you want to join this discussion or bring up a different topic. Our number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. We appreciate that. Also, by the way, just want to – we insert these ads into the show, but sometimes you guys might miss that. We do have Factor Back as a sponsor offering $120 off their meal kits, and I am a big fan of the Factor prepared meal kits. You don't have to cook or assemble anything. It's just 2-3 minutes in the microwave, and you have a meal, and you can pick out, you know, keto, vegetarian, vegan. They have just regular meals with meat and dairy in them, and they're all just whole food, really good meals. And I've had family members get hooked on this. The details can be found at Factor. go.factor75.com/Wade120. That's go.factor75.com/Wade120. And then use code Wade120, and you'll get $120 off your meal delivery. And I'm a big fan, even when they're not sponsoring the show. If there's a gap in between plugs, I'm still having meals delivered. I just find it's super convenient and super healthy and super tasty. That's not heavy on salt, not heavy on bad ingredients, but they just do a fantastic job turning the ingredients they use into really tasty meals. And it's actually the way that some of the vegetables are served, it's got me to actually eat some food that normally I wouldn't even pick out in a salad bar or add to my meals. They do a really good job with it. So I want to throw a quick mention in that since they are back this month as a sponsor of the show, and we appreciate you guys supporting this. And not everybody likes to cook, and not everybody wants to pay those delivery fees for the doorstep delivery services or go drive and sit in a drive-through window. So those Factor meals coming in and giving you you can customize how many meals you get, but having them sit in the fridge 2 to 3 minutes away from a healthy and really tasty meal that you can pick out the category that you want when you choose the meals online is super convenient. And I think I know it appeals to me, and I think a lot of knowing our listenership, that would appeal to you too. And it is a way to be healthy and get that nutrient density that is tough to get when you get that big side of fries and a bunch of processed white flour with a lot of the food delivery services. All right, I want to move to some emails here, Tyler. So James in Clemson emailed while we were talking. He said, something that stands out to me as a big difference between AEW and other promotions is the fact that AEW wrestlers just don't seem as well conditioned. Watching Forbidden Door with my fiance, who is not a fan, it really stood out to her. how much bigger the Japanese guys are. They are in so much better shape. Same goes when comparing them to WWE guys. The WWE guys are always in fantastic shape. Could this be a potential problem that's led to all the injuries of late? And Wade, do you have any insight into the training that the AEW guys go through versus what WWE does? So he's got a follow-up point, but I'll get to that. I do think the number of injuries that AEW is dealing with, as I make my point a lot, everything is case by case. You know, I think you have to take each case individually, not immediately plaster some sort of broad brushstroke behind it. But there have been a lot of injuries. I think, you know, ring style, making every move count, an economy of moves is something that is a big talking point at WWE with the producers and the trainers and the WWE ring style. Wrestlers want to be healthy, and they pick their spots. And, you know, if you've got too much muscle and that's going to lead to a knee injury or a muscle tear, you know, there's people saying you might be carrying too much weight, you know, and that might be what's causing injuries, or you might be at risk of an injury. And you know, there is, even though they're not working the house show circuit as much and getting as many dates in WWE, they are in really good shape. Now, they also are working a style that's less demanding than a lot of what AEW does. And I think AEW has a roster, Tyler, of wrestlers who want to get those This Is Awesome chants, and they're competing with each other. And Tony Khan is rewarding it and gushing about it and loving it and encouraging it. Whereas Vince McMahon and the team that he's built is telling people, hey, slow down. Don't do that move. We're doing that later on the show. That will take away when it's a finisher later or a key spot in a match that we have planned later. If you do it as a transition spot and somebody pops right up from it, that's going to hurt the story we're telling later. There's more of an eye on the big picture with WWE. And, you know, their producers are in the veterans in the locker room, you know, do reflect that as the culture of the company. But they also, you know, don't deliver. Even look at the Usos and the Street Profits from Saturday Night at Money in the Bank. You know, it got a lot of praise. I was a little critical of it because I felt that the setup to eventually the match shifting into third gear and the Profits going on a rally, I thought it was drawn out too long. You know, I thought it was a little, I won't call it self-indulgent, but just a few minutes longer than I thought it needed to be to tell the best story. I'd have liked a little bit more action in the first half to two-thirds of the match. But that said, I respect and understand the psychology of the approach that they took, and it's build, 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 and then bang, and then go to it. And it worked because the crowd was super energized in those final minutes of the match, and people loved that match. And that is very different and illustrative of what WWE does well that gets praised versus what AEW tends to do well that gets praised. And AEW is more about just go, 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 as many high spots, as many dives, as many This Is Awesome chants, and not as much of an obvious, just well-paced story. So I think that probably more than conditioning jumped out to me as the cause of injuries. But it's an interesting question in terms of, you know, how much does the WWE culture reward hitting the gym, not just to gain a bunch of muscle mass, but to just, you know, properly stretch and be toned. Versus an AEW where if the culture is, hey, this isn't a body company, this is a work rate company, can that actually backfire and lead to injuries? And that's something I'd have to think about more and ask around about. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, a lot there. But yeah, I think the main point there is the difference between the two companies. And for me personally as a fan, that's how I'll tackle it, because I think all the points you made there are well-founded. But, you know, for me, WWE is a little more too much on the sanitized side, and that, you know, kind of what you're going to get show in and show out. You know that there's going to be less injuries, but it's going to feel very samey because, you know, people have perfected their, you know, their five signature moves, you know, their transitions. If you watched a lot, it's easy to kind of get locked in, and you have that too in AEW. But you know, the positive of that is everything you mentioned in WWE, that you can have those really special matches. But even so, you have a match like the Street Profits and the Usos, and you have, you know, okay, well, we're at our second near fall, and now the match is really cooking because this is that kind of match. And there's only one of those per show, maybe. And you kind of know, like, hey, this in the WWE spreadsheet is that kind of match. And you can kind of, like, I don't know, there's too much, you know, technical analysis for me when I watch WWE, where AEW feels a little bit more, yeah, free-flowing, but it can really tighten up on certain areas. So, you know, obviously
I'll throw a little analogy in for you, Tyler. Starbucks, every location is different because they have a different footprint to work with in different buildings. But there's also a sameness. You know, there's a branding, there's a consistency to the experience, even if the footprint of the buildings and the storefront is a little bit different compared to the locally owned coffee shops that, you know, from one town to the other, completely different, different ownership, different drinks, but maybe not as clean, maybe not as cohesively organized, maybe not as wheelchair accessible up to code, maybe not not as streamlined in terms of the ordering experience and that type of thing. And some people want that, you know, more corporate, Starbucks experience because they see a Starbucks, they're like, I know what I'm going to get, and it's going to be good enough, even though it's sort of samey. And there's other people who are like, they'll drive past six Starbucks to get to that local coffee shop that at least looks locally owned. And when you walk in, it just feels like a completely different experience than the last locally owned coffee shop you went to, even if there's a little bit less uniformity and smoothness to the ordering process and the seating and the bathrooms and the ordering process. And they both, both thrive and both survive, but both are different. And to me, WWE feels kind of like that corporate Starbucks experience for your coffee drink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can't unionize it either, WWE or Starbucks. So.
There you go, yeah.
There's that as well. But yeah, no, I think that's right. And also people pay more for that, you know, hometown or one-off coffee shop. And, you know, you pay more to watch AEW pay-per-views than you do WWE pay-per-views at this point too. So I think it's a good analogy. You know, I would say if there's a regional coffee shop that maybe has 50 locations, that's probably the sweet spot. You feel, you know, hey, maybe I knew the owner back in the day, and I feel a sense of attachment in the community to that. And that's kind of what I would want AEW to strive for personally as a fan. Obviously, if you're looking and analyzing the business, you know, you want them to maximize everything as much as possible. But yeah, I think, you know, that's a good way to look at it. And then when you go to bodies and things like that, again, that's just being more streamlined and AEW feeling, you know, like the Wild West in comparison, where, you know, Tony is you go out there, you write your own stuff for the most point, and you get over in whatever body you have. And if you change your body, that's on you. And that may or may not help. You know, it didn't help Trent to get riffed. He's still in the same spot. It helped Wardlow to get cut in that position. So, but I do think definitely a culture of wellness and, you know, maybe there's something to look at, and this is just me spitballing, but, you know, maybe there's a way to expand the medical team in AEW compared to WWE. You know, you might know more about that way, but, you know, that's just also growing as a company, and that can be part of it too. And also sometimes you just be injured. So, yeah, I mean, I would say on the emailer's initial comment, when Claudio entered, you know, him versus Zack Sabre Jr. is one thing. I know Zack's not a very big guy, but when Claudio was in that blood and guts match, it was incredible how big he looked compared to everybody else in that ring, you know, minus Jericho, but, yeah. It just totally exemplified like the WWE guy versus, the AEW guy. And Claudio has been a mid-tier WWE guy for so long that it really kind of shocked me to see him in there. And he was one of the biggest guys in the company. So, even more so than Moxley, I feel like, cause he's, you know, about the same size as Brody King we saw tonight. And I wouldn't think that, but, yeah, or at least height wise. So yeah, I think all of those are good points. And, I don't know if we really answered any questions there, if there was a question, but I think it was a good talk.
absolutely. James in Clemson also says, I'd like to say, I really miss John Moxley as champ. He's so good in the role, and it's nice to see his run happen in front of fans. I can't wait for Punk against Mox and really have appreciated how much he has stepped up. I dream of seeing Mox versus Roman Reigns happen one day. Thanks for reading my email. Every listener should go VIP. Thanks, James. I appreciate it. pwtorch.com/goVIP for full details on VIP membership. By the way, we just started running The Fix with Todd Martin, 7 years ago episodes. We just put up a few days ago episode number one from May, 7 years ago. And we're going to kind of catch up so the dates kind of match up. So we'll be running like two shows a week for a little while here. And we had somebody request that a while back, like people who are into the fix now and, you know, wishing that there was an easy way to hit refresh on their phone VIP podcast feed and have the old one show up and not have to just, you know, crawl through the archives of our VIP website. So we're doing that. And then also we're running, again, our after there's a little gap in our library, our 18 years ago original podcast series, post pay-per-view roundtables. We just are putting up the Great American Bash roundtable from 18 years ago, the post pay-per-view roundtable we did. This was before podcast was a word or right around the time it was catching on as a word. We had been doing audio shows for, you know, about a year at that point. And Wade Keller Hotlines, including one that's about to go up, featuring my early analysis of Randy Orton's upside as a main event star. Like, I mean, that's how long we've been doing this. Like, and in fact, that's like half the time we've been doing this. I've been doing this,
mm-hmm.
But you can listen to our podcast from 18 years ago and follow the behind the scenes news stories on the start of TNA. I know there's something coming up, Tyler, about Ring of Honor and, you know, what does it stand for and where is it heading and where does it fit in the wrestling landscape? So VIP membership isn't just about getting ad-free versions of our free shows and some of the VIP shows or, you know, all the whole array of VIP exclusive shows that we do during the week, but also archives. You're just not going to find anywhere else. I know I love listening back to them just because it's like, I said that. Or, oh, I said that. You know, it's both reactions. So, and it's always fun when I post them, and I just end up listening to them and don't get other things done that I want to get done because I find it so fascinating. So, as James said, so many reasons to go VIP, people, and those are a couple new reasons. You can listen to The Fix and our analysis of Kevin Owens making his Raw debut. That was it just posted. Todd's take on that, or go back even further, 18 years for our pay-per-view roundtables, Wade Keller Hotlines, covering the news and more. Okay. So anyway, I went on a whole sidebar there because he said go VIP. So I apologize, Tyler, for that if you had fresh thoughts and now they are like 2 minutes old or 3 minutes old. But Moxie is champion. Man, he's great. I mean, I mm-hmm. the idea of, you know, yes, Battle Royal, you're in a title shot. You leapfrog everyone in the top five. I can be critical of that. But if, you know, sort of explain it, they don't do it too often. Then, you know, now and then for a quick one-off TV match, it gives a reason for it. But I just really like that Moxley. I love Moxley's promo, and I like that, you know, that the boiler room is sort of his backdrop for promos. And I, you know, Malakai Black speaking on behalf of Brody King and having that promo. I like that there were promos building up the main event. I think they did a good job. I don't think they did a great job because as I would have I would have done more to make it seem like a really big deal that the current world title was going to be defended on television. And again, they did a good job. I am big on leaning hard into your main events, even more so. And I would have had other wrestlers talking about it. I would have had graphics on the screen that focused more on that. But like I said, it's a small critique because I think this was one of the better jobs they did, but it just reminded me how much I like when they do a good job, and I would lean even more into it. And yeah, Moxie's getting to be champ in front of fans and getting that crowd reaction. And he had a nice match, and the right person won, but I don't think Brody King lost anything in losing. You know, I mean, unless you saw him as a guy, if they built him slower, he could have been like a pay-per-view opponent for Moxley, but I don't think people see him as that. But I'm curious your take, Tyler, on Moxie as champ, but also is this selling Brody King short by having him wrestle on just sort of a short 5-day turnaround and then sort of be defined down, so to speak, by losing? Or is this kind of about the right spot for him and a good use of him?
Yeah, so on Moxley, I personally think Moxley is the best example of a character in AEW from start to present, obviously because he's not finished, where he's always felt important. He's always had a purpose. He's never kind of been in that, you know, the spot. All those guys I alluded to earlier that kind of ebb and flow on if they're important, what their story is. And Moxley's obviously, you know, he came in with, you know, the Dean Ambrose, you know, he was a big guy in WWE and he was the first guy to come over. He's got all that working for him as well. But just being confident in his character and whether being champion, whether or not being champion, he always had something to do. He always had big matches. And, you know, obviously independent of him, getting clean and whatnot, that he's always felt like an integral part of the company. And I think he's just super successful in more of what, you know, all the discussions we've had all night here, kind of giving our takes on what AEW should do to improve. I think not everyone can be Jon Moxley, but having that model of character would be something I would envy if I was coming into the company. I would try and model myself on that. And I also think the Jon Moxley promo after the first match is one of the most successful segments in perpetuity on AEW television. It just always works and usually builds up a match, or if one of the Blackpool guys have a match later on, he builds that up too. It makes that feel more important. So I think huge successes on all those fronts. And that's coming from me as someone who was, let's say, not the world's greatest or biggest Dean Ambrose fan, the way he was presented in WWE. So I think that proves that you can kind of get over any barrier if you you know, have the opportunity and have the skills that Jon Moxley does. When it comes to Brody King, I think it's a pretty good role for him. I was a big fan of him in Ring of Honor and on the Indies. But, you know, I had messaged you when you asked me to do the show, Wade, and I was excited for Brody King to get the Lance Archer honorary spot here. And the first time that a champion defends the AEW title, they take on usually Lance Archer or some other big guy. Yep. And I think he fits that role. He's not Wardlow, even though he's a better worker in the ring than Wardlow. And I hope we'll talk about his match at some point here. You know, I think this is a good spot for him. He's a guy that can work. He's better in a group to be the heavy. And he can always he's a little bit like Luchasaurus to me, where if you haven't watched the product and you kind of – maybe it's the first match on a pay-per-view and you're watching it randomly for some reason and you haven't watched the product, you see this big guy do a, you know, a tope dive over the top rope and hopefully not break his neck like at the last pay-per-view. But they didn't break his neck. But, you know, he's a guy there that can kind of surprise and delight, if you will, from a fan base. And, you know, he's also intimidating. He looks scary, all the tattoos. He's a big guy. So I don't see him ever as a world champion. So him in this role, I think, elevated him in that, you know, I wasn't even sure that he would be in TV matches for world titles, especially, you know, a little less than he hasn't even been in the company a year, I don't think, maybe about a year at this point. But, so I think he's elevated, and I think this is a good spot for him, and he can definitely be – I think the peak for him would be, you know, maybe winning a TNT title, but definitely being a tag champion, a trio champion when that finally comes in. That's kind of his spot, and I think that's the best use for him. And he's just a good opponent to put guys you want to actually build as your top-tier stars, which is important. And I think AEW has a couple of those guys, which is a positive. So, yeah.
Great. All right, let's go to another call here. We got Bryant and Boston calling. Bryant, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, guys. I thought the show overall was pretty good. Tyler, you wanted someone to bring up Wardlow's match. I'll do you that favor.
Sure.
I do think Wardlow should develop, like, if he hasn't already and he just hasn't debuted him yet, but I think he needs to develop a few more key moves. Like, for instance, there was one where he did kind of a suplex throw at one point to Scorpio Sky. I think he needs to develop like a few more moves that he can add to his repertoire. I mean, like the monster, like three moves of death thing can only last you so long. I think he's capable of a lot more. And I think if he can just add a few more moves into his arsenal, it'll make his matches better. I mean, overall the match, it wasn't bad. I mean, it was kind of what you'd expect, but I don't know. It kind of left me wanting, but I'm glad that Wardlow is the champion, and now maybe the TNT title can resurrect itself from being a steaming pile of crap once Sammy Guevara won it. Because Guevara winning it from Miro was a big, big mistake, and I think most people would agree with that. But I just hope with Wardlow, he can sort of you guys have said, and you especially, Wade, that, you know, the AEW world title doesn't feel like the most important thing on the show. And I tend to agree, with the exception of Moxley. Moxley was always the best AEW world champion because the title was the most important thing on the show, and he always promoted it as such. And I think Punk would have done the same thing had he not gone all stupid and really injured himself in a foolish way, trying to leap into the crowd and hitting himself on a bar. the smartest decision he's ever made. But, you know, I just hope in that vein Wardlow can kind of, you know, hone his craft with his moves a little bit, maybe work on his promos a little bit, you know, and elevate the TNT title to maybe what it was before Sammy Guevara got his hands on it. Just wondering what your guys' thoughts were on that.
Tyler, I'll throw to you first.
Yeah, so on Wardlow, I feel like I'm more concerned than most people are about where this is going. And I think, Brian, you alluded to it a little bit there with the moves of Doom and whatnot. But, you know, from a character standpoint, I'm not sure, you know, he's a babyface. It's not the Adam Page situation. But, you know, what is his motivation going forward? I guess I don't have the greatest motivation. I'm not confident that there's going to be a great story told on his next couple opponents on why he's fighting them, because, you know, he's now kind of achieved they jumped the shark tonight, in my opinion, with the confetti. I thought that was way too much. And it felt like a Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 30, moment.
Or Shawn Michaels.
Actually like an amazing moment.
Series.
Yeah. With him coming back. Yeah. And winning. And, so that jumped the shark big time for me, and I'm not surprised that it happened. That's kind of been the trajectory here. And, you know, just not even that being taken into account. Let's say the story's great. You know, Scorpio Sky is not the most protected guy on the roster, but, I mean, he's also not a protected guy. And I wonder, like, who is going to, you know, get, you know, it's like the Hook thing, but it's a guy who's got the second most important title in the company. And I feel like the Hook discourse was much stronger than the Wardlow discourse here. And I like Wardlow, and I think he's got value to the company. It just feels like that exact same character, but he's the second champion of the company, and I don't know who he's going to fight that has a chance to not get beat in 7 minutes. And I feel like they can really book themselves into a hole here. And I don't know if the AEW crowd will turn on him. If I was not on this show and I was just a bystander, I'm starting to turn on him as a viewer if I take my critical eye off of this personally. So I think that might happen in the next 3 to 6 months for other people. So I guess I might have lost the sauce on your original question there, but that's kind of, I just want to get that discourse out there, because I just want to know what you think, Wade, and Brian, what you think as well. So I guess Wade, you first on that.
Well, I'm with you on the confetti. It also kind of felt like there were like two or three people at ringside off camera, just like hitting fire, fire, fire on it. And then the camera was like angled at a way to make it look like it was more than it was. And it's just, I'm not quite sure that fits the Wardlow character. I like the idea of making a big deal out of title changes. It felt a little backyard wrestling-ish the way that it was done. following Wardlow to the ring from the back, to me, just feels too derivative of Goldberg. And, you know, Wardlow chance to Goldberg derivative. Wardlow's different than Goldberg. I think Wardlow is more Batista than Goldberg. If you're going to pull from somebody, and you can do a blend and then, you know, kind of add your own personality as you go. But Wardlow is a work in progress on the mic and in the ring. And it's not who he is not happening. Is not defining itself in a self-apparent way. He's not finding his groove as a character as quickly and naturally as I would hope. And I think it's a warning sign that he's just not there yet, but we also don't know where that landing place is. And I don't sense he does either. And, you know, MJF was a huge part of Wardlow's act. And now that he's on his own, I don't know. I think he should have beat Scott tonight. I think they've invested a lot in him. I think they should be pushing him. But man, I would be getting him reps on the microphone on every episode of Dark, and I wouldn't even necessarily air him. I'd have him in front of those fans, trying to figure out what his voice is. I'd even bring in a writer to sit down, or a wrestler who's, you know, really good with promos, maybe someone who worked in WWE, and just go, all right, you know, let's work on this. You know, what's your voice? Who are you? Let's dig deeper, because I just don't think what he's producing. There's people who can just do their own thing. And, you know, Matt Hardy and Christian and Moxley, you know, Bryan Danielson, You know, they just know who they are, and you just say, go give me a promo, and they just do it, and they're trusted. Wardlow's not there yet, so he's still a work in progress. I think one of the keys to keep people from turning on him is part of it is Wardlow's got to make it seem like he's self-aware that he's not a finished product and let fans in a little bit. And I think his character, yeah, I think the type of character he's playing is, you know, the tendency is to be like, nope, I know who I am. I'm a badass and I'm going to go out and do my thing and I know who I am. But I think there's a way to still take fans on a journey and just talk with them in a way that feels a little more connected to who he really is. Now, if who he really is isn't something that's very marketable, well, that's a problem that's going to, you know, that's going to persist. But if there is something about him that is marketable, I'd try to find a way to tap into that a little bit more with his on-air character. And, you know, he has different ring style, you know, just tossing around Scorpio Sky and batting off a bunch of MMA people that's swarming him and hitting his finisher and then posturing for the camera and then hitting it again and again. It's like that's very different than AEW's brand. And I don't know that Wardlow and AEW are particularly good at that. And it may turn out this is something they end up pulling back on and go a different direction with him on. Go ahead, Brent.
Yeah, I liken it to, it's sort of like a halfway painting. You don't know if you're going to get crap, treasure, or somewhere in between. It's like you said, a work in progress. And I also think coming out of Double or Nothing, the push into the Forbidden Door just like put like an immediate halt to his momentum. I mean, personally, I think the Forbidden Door, the whole Forbidden Door thing, yeah, it was a great commercial success and everything, but I think in terms of storylines, it was a massive mistake, and it really halted Wardlow's momentum coming out of Double or Nothing, and now they're trying to capture it again. I just didn't like Forbidden Door as a concept. And it showed in the ratings too, but I think that played a role in halting Wardlow's momentum and kind of taking the focus off of him.
Yeah, I think that's something AEW should be concerned about is the whole issue of momentum and seeing things through, paying fans off who invest in something and not having a 6-week gap between seeing them again or actually seeing a development with them again. There's many ways to present your wrestling product that is not just like WWE, and there's many territories from the past to play off of and in New Japan and what ROH did early on and what ROH did in different incarnations and what Impact and TNA have done in different incarnations. And I mean, there's all kinds of things to draw from. So this isn't about, well, there's AEW's way and then WWE's way. And people, you know, should say, you know, anyone who says do it more like WWE is blasphemy. It's like, it's not that. It's just, there aren't many ways to do things. And there are some things WWE does that work that would be really exciting to see with AEW specific traits as part of it, as opposed to just, you know, reflexively pushing back against it. And part of that is kind of deciding what your top few storylines are and really making sure you're consistent with presenting them on every show every week.
You mean there's more than one way to book a show instead of being centered around a 77-year-old's fascination on dick jokes and a guy puking in the ring? Because I listened to your review a little bit because I wanted to see how what your reaction to puking thing was, and I was just listening to that, and I just wonder how you get through watching that piece of crap that's raw. To be honest, I'm just glad I don't watch it anymore. But anyway, you guys don't have any other callers on waiting, do you?
Well, we got some emails. I haven't looked at the switchboards, but go ahead. Okay. You can bring something else up.
Yeah. I was just checking to make sure, you know, like Javier wasn't.
I appreciate it.
Or something.
Yeah.
I thought I'm kind of divided on the whole Ring of Honor thing. I mean, they're building up some good matches, but you know, at the same time, you don't want to take the focus off the main thing. But for instance, like Daniel Garcia's promo was great. I thought it was great. And, you know, they're building up a match that a lot of them want to see with him and Miller Yuta. But I thought he cut a great promo, you know, but it's kind of a double-edged sword. You're given exposure to young guys who are really doing well, but at the same time, you're taking away from the core product. So I'm a little divided on the ROH thing because, like, the Jay Lethal, Satnam Singh, Sanjay Dutta, I remember him back in the old days of TNA. We didn't really need to see that segment. I mean, unless Jay Lethal's going to be imitating Ric Flair again, I don't really. That little segment could have been on Rampage or something. And like most of the show was good, but there was one part that was really, in my opinion, unnecessary. Like, I know Rochester is Brody Lee's home. And, you know, I obviously feel like they should make a mention and some sort of tribute thing, but you don't need the Dark Order, who literally nobody cares about, to do that. Could have easily done that off air or during a commercial break or something like that. Didn't need to waste precious television time doing that. And especially bringing out QT Marshall. Marshall should be a Rampage guy. He shouldn't be getting time. Like, that whole segment was stupid. They could have used that for something else. So I'm just wondering what your guys' thoughts were on the ROH focus and then that one bad segment that I just described.
Well, Tyler, if you want to say more about ROH, you can, and what Brent brought up. But I'll start with his second point here on Dark Order. And to me, just having Hangman come out again, I know it's a throwback, and I know some people have
He came out?
You know, yeah. he joined Evil Uno and attacking. Yeah, he came out and helped attack Evil Uno, attack QT Marshall.
Talk about a fall from grace.
I have been won over by QT Marshall being the type of heel that you just want to see get smacked around. But I don't think I would have said yes. Let's assemble the Dark Order in the ring and have them tease that they're breaking up, only to then say, we're sticking together forever. It didn't work for me as something that belonged on this show. And I do think it could have been something off air or something that was more YouTube exclusive. It didn't overstay its welcome. I guess it probably did, but it didn't like grotesquely overstay its welcome. So I don't know. I mean, you're back in Rochester. I don't think they should feel obligated. And I was sort of hoping this was going to be the end of Dark Order. Instead, it wasn't. Tyler, what did you think of that segment that closed out hour one?
Yeah, to be, I guess, the most positive out of the three of us, I thought Hangman had a really strong reaction from the crowd. And I think he's gotten really good reactions post his title run in comparison to where he was. It's just kind of funny how he's booked better as the non-champion than he was a champion. But, yeah, I mean, definitely you could have done this off air. You could have done this in between Dynamite and Rampage and have a good moment for the crowd. I would have, you know, if you want to honor Brody Lee, then maybe say something during the ring announcement in Rochester before the TNT title match and kind of have that be in honor of him as, you know, as Tony kind of said, as the quote greatest, you know, TNT champion of all time. And I think that'd be a more, I don't know, adult is maybe not the right word, but just like the nuanced way to treat that and have the live crowd really even be more behind that match and have that be there. But I think also the Dark Order stuff was a wink and a nod to that kind of, you know, like Christian stuff of talking about real news where, hey, we're going to stay together. We're the members of Dark Order that got re-signed or are not yet released from our original contracts. So that was the biggest newsworthy moment for me, even though it's not very newsworthy. So yeah, I think it was fine. It just feels like at a certain point, yeah, do you have to do it every time you're in Rochester? Which, like, it sucks to even say that out loud, that, like, you know, that you're thinking that's like, okay, now are we obligatory going to honor him every time, which, you know, probably should, but it feels, again, like something you have to do and then doesn't feel special. So they always kind of walk in that fine line with them honoring somebody.
And I think for Hangman, he's getting good reactions and, you know, coming out, I mean, he needed to come out at that point, given the backstory, but let's find something important for him to do. You know, let's get him. I'll take Hangman against Ricky Starks. You know, like, set that up. I'll take Hangman Page against Danny Garcia. I'll take Hangman Page against Jake Hager. I'll take Hangman against Malakai. Like, just give me just a regular, basic, standard babyface promo from Hangman, heel promo from the heel, and they have a match. Like, I just do that. Like, just, Dark Order just feels like a storyline that's divisive. And again, it was appropriate here, if you're going to do the segment, that he'd be there and come help out. And it is kind of at the core who he is, but I just want to see him just have a reason to fight in a singles feud in a way where you're like, all right, that's why he's not focused on getting the world title back, because this guy got in his face or this guy said the wrong thing and set him off. And they just, I don't know who that's going to be, but I want it to be somebody, and I want them to get to it. Brian, back to you for any closing words.
You could always build up to Hangman versus Wardlow as well. Not obviously right now, but maybe some point off in the distance. Because I remember back when they were having the Eliminator tournament that Omega won to face Moxley, one of the early matches was Wardlow versus Hangman, and that was a pretty good match, if I recall. Of course, that was back in 2020, so it was a while ago. But, you know, that's always something you could have in your back pocket for later on, maybe 2023 or something, I don't know. But to close out, I'll do what I usually do with the women, and I'll start off with that segment with Jade Cargill and Stokely Hathaway was terrible. It wasn't good. Like, the whole cut the shit thing, it's stupid, and it's repetitive, and it serves no purpose, and Jade Cargill was starting to grow on me, but now her act's starting to get old, and I kind of want to see her lose the title to either Statlander or Athena, because her act's starting to get old, so they really need to either reform the booking that they're using for her right now or do something else, because it's not working, and I don't see her as the top female star anymore. I see it more as Thunder Rosa, which leads me to my second point. I thought for sure when they announced that Thunder Rosa Tony Storm tag match, I thought Zach Hador and I were chatting a little bit on Twitter, and we thought there'd be a heel turn or something, you know, with Storm or Rosa, and I was thinking it's either going to be that or they're going to be getting serious about bringing in women's tag titles. And sure enough, there was no heel turn. And you know what, with the, you seem to be having more of a focus on women's tag teams with, Mercedes Martinez and Serena Deeb. Of course, that might just be going for the ROH world title thing. It's split there, but you know, it seems to me like unless they're planning some sort of heel turn down the line between Rosa and Storm, or they're building into a match at All Out, where I think Storm should go over. But maybe they're planning on bringing in women's tag titles. I mean, but I know too many titles and stuff, but, you know, just kind of indulge me here a little bit. Do you think that's what they're going for?
Tyler, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I was in the same boat. I mean, I thought when this was announced, I thought they would lose somehow, and that would kind of get us to the next match. Obviously, they're slow playing it. But yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you and your quick assessment at the top of the show, Wade. I think, you know, Brian, as well, that this was kind of hastily built to match and not well worked, in my opinion, if we're going to jump to the point there. But if you had any other points on the story and what it's going to be, I just don't have a good feel, because, you know, when you think something's definitely going to happen, it doesn't happen, you kind of get shook. So I need time to reassess. I need to backtrack and think about it. But yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, I like Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm together. I like Nyla Rose and Marina Shafir together. I think they did an adequate job building this up. I don't sense it's heading towards either breaking up with one another, or either turning on each other. I don't, I'm kind of like you. I don't have a strong feeling on it. It doesn't feel essential to me at this point. Mm-hmm. It, you know, Marina Shafir, Tony's invested in her somewhat, and she's sort of the designated jobber in tag matches, but she is, someone who I'd rather be in a tag match than a singles match at this point, and doing kind of her thing, but in doses with another partner. And it's a way to get Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm on TV. I don't know. I mean, it's a broader, larger issue that deserves, you know, more time than we're going to give it, you know, over an hour and a half into this show. But, you know, the women's division still needs some work, and we're still, you know, a couple years in. It's that token spot. in the third half hour of the show, where it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy that it's not as over as it ought to be, unless it's, you know, Britt Baker doing something. And it just seems clear at this point, you know, women's wrestling in the women's division is not a passion of Tony Khan, and the scouting hasn't brought in the type of depth that the men's division has. And it's leading to, you know, less depth and fewer segments. And when we talk about sticking within AEW canon on Dynamite, I would not be against more women's segment being weaved in than sort of the token. Here's our, you know, current feud that's not super developed, but has enough backstory to justify it. And then just, you know, check that box and move on. So yeah, but like I said, that's a kind of a broader topic, and you can do a whole show on that. Brian, I appreciate you giving us a call and chiming in with some topics.
All right. Thanks. Thanks a lot, you guys. And have a good night.
Yep. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Back to the inbox here to wrap things up. I've still got James's email here. I'll mark that as answered. Let's see. JB in Detroit says, how does this Christian Luchasaurus Jungle Boy angle play out? Does Jungle Boy ultimately have to go through Luchasaurus to get to Christian, or could this somehow be an act from Luchasaurus and he's still loyal to Jungle Boy? Also, where do we see Luchasaurus going after this feud? Obviously, we always knew that JB would be the face and Christian would be the heel, and those seem to be appropriate slottings, but I'm not sure Luchasaurus' heel act has much legs outside of this feud. As always, love the show and go VIP. I have to say, I think this is really clever, AEW, to have Luchasaurus be the heel and wrestle for Christian. And is Christian injured? Is he injured right now, or is it just saving him for special matches, Tyler? I'm trying to recall if I heard.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard that he's injured. It just feels like kind of his trajectory within AEW is that I would assume in his mindset that he's like, I want to work and it's special when I work sort of thing.
And maybe, I mean, Tony's been a little cryptic with me when talking about injuries recently, and, you know, just like, if you knew how many people were injured, you'd be less hard on some, you know, you'd look at some of the booking decisions differently, that kind of thing. So he was somebody who I was wondering, you know, just if I had heard or not, and just forgot. But nevertheless, I like Christian wrestling as a veteran who doesn't wrestle all the time and having Luchasaurus do it for him. As I said earlier, I just wish there was a little more meat on the dinosaur bone to get into. You know, why is Luchasaurus siding with Christian? Luchasaurus isn't going to tell that story, but Christian could. And I'd love to see Christian talking and Luchasaurus reacting Kane-like with body language that backs up what Christian is saying, and, you know, emoting through that body language and little head gestures and that kind of thing. So I just think there's more they can do with this, but I like it. I don't know where it's going. I think Luchasaurus and Christian ought to stay heel together for quite a while. I think Luchasaurus should be at ringside when Christian wrestles, and he can be a guy who's, you know, doing interference and distractions when called for, not overdone. And, you know, I think Jungle Boy against Luchasaurus is an intriguing match because of how they've been together for so long. So overall, I like it, and I don't think Luchasaurus is faking it. Maybe if I looked at everything he's done, I'd be like, well, there's no way if he's faking it, he would have done that. Or maybe there hasn't been that moment yet. But I'd have to kind of refresh my mind on if that even seems plausible at this point. But I don't even see any reason to do that. I just want more of a story so I believe it more. And let Christian dig into that instead of, you know, turning a DUI into an on-air heat generator. Tyler.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, not to get, you know, anyone in trouble, but the Kane, you know, correlation is pretty easy to make with the music, with the flames, all that sort of stuff. And if you book him accordingly, you know, you don't want to steal every bit from 90s WWF, but and he just works in a lot of ways. And I wouldn't have thought that this would be the direction they go. And it's working a lot more than I would have thought initially. And I think it works because, you know, if you look at the big guys on the roster, and the ones that come to mind to me are Archer and Wardlow and Brody King are kind of the, and I guess Brian Cage, technically he's getting paid. but you know, Archer and King are kind of those tweener, you know, this is awesome. Both these guys fight forever, sort of big guy. And obviously Wardlow is a baby face. Hobbs, you know, is more of a heel, but Luchasaurus fits that, you know, kind of 80s, 90s heel monster that you don't have sympathy for, and you can use him even outside of this feud with Christian and Jungle Boy. You can move Christian and him on to somebody else, some other baby face, and maybe he wins, and then he, you know, he wins two feuds, and then he puts someone over, makes them feel big, like he put Jungle Boy over in this feud, et cetera. And I think, like you said, Luchasaurus being the guy that works, that, you know, does all the work for him, and then maybe eventually turns on Christian, you know, years down the line and becomes a babyface again and is better for it. I think sort of that direction is the best way to go, as opposed to if he, you know, ultimately in the, at the end of this feud aligns with Jungle Boy and Jungle Boy goes off on his own. I think Luchasaurus is quickly off TV pretty regularly and doesn't really have much of a character. I think him in this new, you know, evil version of himself with Christian, it gives a lot more. That's what I'd be pushing for if I was, you know, Luchasaurus, the person, to try and stay relevant.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Next email comes from John in Tennessee. Any idea what's going on with the commentary team? Second week in a row, Jim Ross is only doing the second hour and Tony's only working the first hour. I feel like it was overkill with three traditional play-by-play guys and needed a change. However, I'm just curious, is JR going to be phased out and what his contract status is? And also, why do you think Taz is a heel when he is a manager but a face on commentary? I like Taz as a heel announcer in WWE, but this version is super bland. Yeah, it's interesting. Let's start rumors. Tony Schiavone and Jim Ross can't stand each other. They can't stand to be next to each other. And Tony Khan just had to come up with this as a way to get through it. No. Well, I'm not ruling that out, but I'm not ruling it in. I'm just said that to stir trouble. Tyler, what are you picking up in terms of the news reporting or the buzz about Jim Ross getting a ring entrance every show, but staying fresh and sort of being the main event guy? If we go back to Nitro, you know, when Nitro went to 2 hours, they changed announcers mid-show. And I thought it was cool. It gives a fresh voice to the show and sort of marks a transition point. It seems like with Ross, it won't necessarily be the start of sec hour two as much as maybe just coming out for the main event sometimes. It's still a work in progress. So, what are you hearing and what do you think on it?
Well, yeah, I mean, on contract status, I think especially with JR, I mean, Tony Khan takes him to, you know, ringside at UFC, which is obviously an honor roll. And I think JR is going to have a job as long as he wants in AEW is the vibe I get. But
and I think he did just resign, by the way, not long ago. So,
yeah.
Yeah,
it was like to get him to, because he's what, is he 70 yet or is he 69 years old or is he older than that? I don't know. But I know he said in when
he turned
70.
He turned 70 this year.
Okay. He said, you know, he resigned for an odd amount of time because that got him right at 50 years in the business. And that seems to be what he at least wants to accomplish. So I think after that is kind of an unknown after this contract. But, you know, I think he even said tonight, like, oh, you're going to get, you know, they're going to yell at you online, Taz, for some comment. So, you know, I think there's probably a portion of him who, you know, probably wanted to, obviously he slowed down when he was getting his cancer treatment and he came back full time. I think, you know, it's probably just sort of a rotation if I had to guess. I mean, you know, I'm not his age and I would certainly, you know, if I could take a slow down on anything in life, I probably would take it at this point. So I can only imagine. But, you know, I think that too, and just to change it up, like, you know, I personally like Excalibur and Taz. And you know, I guess a rotating cast of people is probably my preference within AEW, but this again, it makes JR these past 2 weeks feel more important than he has. And I think that's also part of it. And Tony does so much of the running around and holding the stick for people that this, like this, when he's got to hide behind the curtain during, you know, where they show pre-taped interviews and then he's got to pop in so you don't see it. I think all of that is like, gotta be annoying and wasting time in production. So that's probably also part of it. Hey, in the second hour, we don't have to mess around and have Tony run and hide behind the curtain while we're showing a pre-tape. So I think it's just like an advance. I would have done it a long time ago, and it helps change things up. And I would guess that Tony, it probably feels a little bit more the way I do on the commentary, that it's probably more superior with Excalibur, Taz, and a third person who's coming in to help build it, whether it be, you know, an Adam Cole, a William Regal, a Ricky Starks, a Jericho, something like that to kind of put the match over, get a different feel, I think is more his preference at this point, would be my overall take with no information. So take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, yeah. They could do an angle where, like, Tony's brother Theodore is, or Theo or something, is the one actually doing the backstage interviews when Tony just sits in the announce table and suddenly, someone else shows up. Yeah, I mean, if part of it is just an endurance issue for JR, they think he's better when he's energized, and we're going to limit the amount of time he's on air. Plus, he's a legend, and he should be treated as such. And it keeps him off of matches that he's not super invested in, and maybe undercutting in the spirit of being honest and blunt and keeping his credibility. That can sometimes undercut booking live on TV too, if it's something that he's not a big fan of. As far as Taz goes, I mean, I'm a fan of Taz, but I'd like to see him have a role-defined character. And if he's going to be a manager or he's going to be a commentator, I'd kind of like him to pick one or the other. And I feel like it's sort of the manager thing, and the whole team Taz is a bit in limbo. And I guess I'd rather have some sort of definitive endpoint or explanation for where Team Taz stands and what he's doing and who he is on commentary too. And I just don't think we have that right now, Tyler.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think he's trying to balance that too. And he probably would like a resolution, if I had to guess as well on that.
Yeah.
So you can define your character. And then also, you know, I think him not, you know, being Hook's manager as a result, after, if he's not with Team Taz, you know, if Starks and Hobbs do their own thing, I think that would be a net positive for both as well. My two cents.
By the way, James and Clemson, I know you flagged yourself and then unflagged yourself. So if you do want to be on the show, we can bring you on, but push one again. Otherwise, I will stop drawing attention to you because maybe you decided. We covered your topic already, but you were next in line. So I'll jump to definitely got more emails we'll probably get to here. But, we got a different perspective on Dark Order. This is from Tad, who says, tonight was the most I've cared about Dark Order in anything beyond their tribute work for Brody Lee. It had the sentimental value with -1, a video package giving context to the QT spots, and a big unexpected music pop for the big star who's known as a friend of the group. I'll likely never care again, but tonight I popped, and I really wanted QT to get his ass kicked. So anyway, I mean, that's just, I don't know that I felt all that different than this, but I still wouldn't have put it on Dynamite, and I can't believe I'm saying it, but I'm sort of a defender of QT being that, getting my time every 6 weeks on Dynamite and then getting beat up on Rampage. I think that's fine. You know, I mean, he shouldn't be against the top guy. He shouldn't be feuding with Hangman Page next. You know, God, I just talked that into possible existence. Maybe that's what this is headed. Although, you know, if Hangman just beats up QT in a 3-week program, and then that's because that's when a higher level heel will be freed up from a feud he's currently in, then that's fine too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I would, if I can, yeah, one thing on that. I mean, it's, you know, empty calories, I think, is how I felt about it. And that's, you know, fine from time to time, but it is what it is. And then on QT, I agree with you 100% on that. And I would even, like, go as far, if you ever were going to do a match to rekindle some of the Jade stuff, I think if QT challenged Jade Cargill and she just squashed him and hit a move on him, I think that would help her personally with me. So I think that'd be an interesting way to go. If they ever wanted to dip their toe in the intergender stuff, I think that's one of the few exceptions that you could make, and I think it would be a noteworthy moment on AEW. So I'll just leave that there.
All right. Okay, one or two emails, and we'll wrap up here. Josh from DC says, hey, Wade, I love the dynamic between Christian as an instigator and Luchasaurus stopping people from touching him. I can do without the real-life shock value cheap shots, but has Christian replaced MJF in his role on the show? He has, and I think he takes pride in it. And frankly, I bet Tony takes pride in having – somebody on the bench who can come in and be the, oh my God, did he just say that guy on his show? An experienced talker who's generating heat and can give AEW a dose of that kind of heel promo. I think, and I hesitate because I'm repeating myself here, but I will say I don't want Christian to seem like he's just trying to fill MJF's shoes, because I think Christian should bring himself to it, and I also would like Christian to focus more on backstory. And I've said the word a lot this show, but AEW canon. I don't need DUI stuff brought up on the show. I don't want the Usos turning that into heel lead. I don't want heels bringing that up around Matt and Jeff to get heat. I just think DUIs are a real serious thing, and when you remind me that you're still employing someone, or you know, in the case of the Usos, or you're trying to generate heat or sympathy for Matt off of it just feels tasteless. So I'd stay away from that. So yeah, just Christian, talk about Luchasaurus, talk about Jungle Boy, talk about things that have happened, and keep it more storyline based with a little bit of that sort of MJF hashtag OMG, did he just say that, built in, but don't make that the central focus that we're talking about when it comes to Christian every week.
Yeah, and I made that comparison at the top of the show, so I don't need to belabor that point with MJF and Christian. You know, he's even in the same segments as MJF.
Yeah,
he would
usually have
that.
Yeah.
So yeah. Obviously that's formatting by Khan there, and I think it's just unfortunate. I mean, not unfortunate, but it's just like is the fact of the matter that it seems like Christian will always be compared to someone in the business. Obviously, Edge is the main comparison there, but maybe that just seems like his karmic fate is that he is compared to somebody else who did the spot, and people are going to say that other person did it a little bit better. That's not even a shot at Jay, but that is just like that is just like kind of some of us have that lot in life. Is how I feel.
All right, Zach in Texas. We'll, I think, wrap up emails here, the mailbag. Gentlemen, that was a nice little utility episode of Dynamite. It was less about tonight and more about building a bunch of stuff up. I think TK is finally taking some of Wade's notes. JR only called half the show. The main event was built up well and constantly. I can never be pleased, can I? I want more. But like I said, they did a good job. They threw in inset vignettes to explain certain points. They aired some of the phenomenal Matt Menard promo post Blood and Guts. Yes, they did. The production is improving, which is a positive. Another positive is getting the Briscoes and FTR rematch at the next ROH pay-per-view, Death Before Dishonor. Never say TK doesn't recognize greatness because their first match was fantastic. Ruby and Ty got a story out of B&G, which is great. Using the Dustin Rhodes Memorial arm in the corridor spot was a nice touch. Really, the only negative was Christian taking shots at Matt by using Jeff's addiction issue. It's not WWE building an entire angle around Jeff's problems bad, but it is just unnecessary. Zach, you and I are on the same page. When have I ever said that? I'm sure I've said it before. yes, I will say I thought the dumbest thing on the whole show was Ruby holding her hand up in perfect position for the door to be smashed on it. What was that? Am I missing something? Was she like... Why did she hold her arm? And I am like, when I'm around a car door that's open, like I'm so scared that someone's going to like fall into the door and crunch my hand or my arm. Like I am so aware. It's the idea that you just hold her hand up while someone's about to charge us. Like reshoot that. That looked horrible. What happened there, Tyler? What?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of anything that might have happened. There was no duct tape. There was no one inside the car holding your hand, which are two things that you could do to tell that story a little better.
Yes.
But I don't know. We didn't bring it up, and I feel like I was being more negative than usual on tonight's show, even though I did relatively like the show. So I didn't want to like, you know, I brought the whole Wardlow energy here of being really concerned about that. So I didn't want to like just triple down because I did like the show in general. So yeah, I agree.
So a couple other things not mailbag related that we haven't touched on that I want to bring up. Ricky Starks and Pyros Hobbs getting some mic time. I like Hobbs starting and Ricky kind of batting cleanup a little bit and then just being just like out of control and so worked up that Hobbs is practically having to hold him back. Get Ricky Starks mic time because he's really good. Get Hobbs mic time because he needs the reps and he's earning his time. So I just like when the Bucks seem like they are invested in AEW and a central focus beyond trying to have the next match of the year candidate buzz. That's good. And I know that's their, you know, that's where they came from is, you know, having big matches in PWG or, you know, wherever. It's just like they're not the best bout machine, but they're the great tag team match machine. And I want to see them part in person in front of crowds on a weekly basis as central characters. I think Matt and Nick are tremendous personalities. They are distinct personalities. And I think they're just scratching the surface of who they can be as a weekly national television act. And we're years into this, and I don't think they've fleshed out enough of a difference between the indie great matchbox and weekly characters. And they've had little stretches here and there, but I want them not backstage. I don't want them literally phoning in promos. I want them, and I know they don't like to travel all across the country, but I want them there, you know, most weeks and in person and owning the tag division. And so in a generic sense, I like that. I'm not, you know, it's sort of an eye roll when star ratings are referred to. I just don't think wrestlers should talk about match quality as a thing of pride. I think it should be in real life, on podcasts, on social media, perhaps. But on TV shows, it should be about winning. You know, it's not what one person gave you a star rating for. It makes you out to be, you know, I don't want to say it. Just focus, you know, your athletes try to win titles and win matches and settle feuds, and you shouldn't be out there talking about star ratings and awards. So I would edit that out in the future, but I liked that they were out there. So anyway, Tyler, your thoughts on that segment.
Yeah, so start to with Hobbs and Starks. That's the Ricky Starks I remember watching in NWA. That kind of made me fall in love with him and his character and wanting him to get signed in AEW when he had his, you know, his match with Cody. And so it's good to see that. It's hard to get that character over on commentary without just stepping over everyone. So I think this is a good role for him. And yeah, I mean, just showing him there and pairing that with a good match next week, I think is the best use of his character. So yeah, big positives there. And him and Hobbs felt like a unit, and they haven't always felt like a singular unit in the way they acted tonight. So I like that. And the same thing, you know, with the Young Bucks, I agree with you 100%. Them, especially wrestling, you know, the Team Taz and Swerve in Our Glory, it feels like a fresh matchup also. I think they really get in the rut of, you know, wrestling FTR, you know, three times, wrestling the Lucha Bros three times, Jurassic Express a couple times, the Hardys. It's kind of, they want to have their series and not have, you know, hot, you know, fresh new matches. And I think this is a good example of a fresh match that you're not sure who's going to win and puts them in a prime role. And then from a behind the scenes standpoint, I mean, you know, we know the deals of their 1 year kicker got extended and Cody's did not, right, as EVPs. And if you're Tony Khan, you have some power in that situation. Let's say this is the last, you know, 6 months of a contract before they get re-signed. Like, do you want to re-sign guys that don't want to travel and be on every episode of TV and be out there? You know, I think you can leverage them a bit because, you know, they can definitely go do PWG and some indie stuff, but I don't think they're, and maybe they could go to WWE, but I think Tony Khan's got a lot of leverage there that he may or may not be able to enact and get them to be more of a regular act on the show. And when it comes to their characters, I think the best opportunity to get a more defined character for both of them is probably when they turn babyface again, which I would presume would be sometime around when Kenny comes back and they could do, you know, they're going to bring the trio titles back. And I think those three could have the trio titles and be fan favorites. You could tell a fun 3 month story, 6 month story with them in that role and kind of redefine them in that capacity. And kind of, you could do everything we've said tonight. You could tell the story of them and Kenny without it being too much Wikipedia searching for people. And you can kind of tell a remake of that and kind of redefine all three of their characters as faces, I think would be a pretty strong way to go. So, but yeah, I agree. I think they're an integral part of the show and they've always been an untapped resource for AEW, and it's kind of shocking. So,
what did you think of what they did with Smart Mark Sterling and Tony Neitz and Orange Cassidy, Chuck Taylor, Trent Barretta with Danhausen? I will say I want to be a Danhausen fan, and I am a Danhausen fan, but I don't think every week he's gotten on base with what they've given him to do or all that. I got a real kick out of him this week. I think his mannerisms are, I know for some people, like, get him off my screen, and I get that, and I'm not shocked by it, and you're not wrong to think that. It is totally subjective, but I get a kick out of what he does and how he does it, and him showing up with a wrinkled sheet of paper, and it's just like, in no way that you can explain logically. And then he just starts saying legal terms, you know, sustained, hearsay. He's so dry in his outlandishness. And then he's got the goofy facial expressions. I enjoyed it. I think, again, this gets into the argument about, you know, injecting, you know, like the back of the Raw format sheet. You know, do we have two moments where people will laugh? You know, do we have two funny segments? And, you know, funny being defined by Vince McMahon and all that. But, pro wrestling, I think there doesn't have to be forced, doesn't have to be all the time, but there's room for comedy, and I think that this is the right place to insert him as just someone roaming around being a goof, but in a way that I got a kick out of this week. And then I think Mark Sterling is a good character, but I think having him, you know, managing Nice in a lower card feud is good. It feels like a pretty big step down for Orange Cassidy, but But some would say, no, the best friend's gimmick is you know, something Tony overrated. So anyway, your thoughts.
Yeah, so I would say for anyone that does not like Danhausen, Tony Khan certainly does. So you should just, like, build that in, that there's going to be some role of that going forward. Just like, you know, I think Tony's a little bit more malleable than Vince is with his humor that he likes. But I personally enjoy the character. I kind of always have. And I think he on the screen for 20 seconds tonight?
Yeah.
I think he comes in doses, and there's stuff on YouTube you can watch if you really like the character. And I think that shorter content is there for people that really enjoy the character. And, you know, he's not beating people. He's a comedy character, and he's not making anyone look bad that should be looking bad. You know, he's not, I think it's been pretty deftly utilized. I think his character has been well used almost the entire time. So, but that's, you know, I'm biased because I enjoy that kind of comedy, and I would align with Tony Khan on that too. So take that all in consideration. But with Sterling, yeah, I think he's in a good spot here. I think he's in a lot of the same mold as QT Marshall is, where if you need someone to, you know, get, you know, be a comedy figure in a match and maybe be, you know, like he was tagging with Nice and be the guy that you know, can give Nice a loss, and then Nice can turn on him and maybe move on and do something a little better. He's a good role for that. I actually, at this point, have preferred Jade and him as opposed to Stokely and the baddies and Jade, those versions. Now that story's not done, but I think he worked well with Jade, and he's kind of flexible in that role. And I would not have said that when Mark Sterling first appeared on the screen as MJF's lawyer. I did not think that worked either. So I think he's more flexible and more you can do more with him than most people think. So I think he's a value in that way.
I'm kind of leaning your way. I want to give Stokely, not the way, more time to kind of figure out the chemistry there. And,
for sure.
And you know, they're already, you know, Jay's already kind of pissed off at him. And so we'll let the story kind of play out. And it's not a bad other option, but I get what you're saying. And what I liked about the Sterling Jade dynamic is that I got the feeling Jade used Mark Sterling for nothing. She just used him for the purpose of doing the dirty work, like J.J. Dillon and the Horsemen, I was going to say Paul Ellering and the Warriors, but they were pals. You know, they were working, you know, imagine them hanging out. With Sterling, you could just see Jade had contempt for Sterling, but he served a purpose in her life. And I like Jade using somebody like that who's a goof, but he's just good enough at something that she puts up with all the irritating aspects about him, because he helped her just focus on working out at the gym and planning her match and doing whatever, you know, her focus is. And I'm not sure with Stokely they've kind of figured that out yet. And I think now, you know, Stokely's more likely to compete with Jade in terms of the segments, as opposed to just sort of be the brunt of disdain and the useful idiot. They just have to flesh that out and figure out what Stokely's dynamic will be with Jade. I think they're moving a little too quickly into, you know, dissension between them. I know, you know, kind of an injury and can change plans or accelerate things, but I both can be fine, you know, I was against Sterling at the beginning. I warmed up to it pretty quickly and I thought it was going well and didn't need to end. Okay.
Yes.
So finally, the Acclaimed and the Gun Club. Breaking up, Billy with a swerve of managing the Acclaimed. Nope, I'm with my sons. A clunky match. You know, they had to play the angle off, but I think the fact that the crowd didn't really pop and didn't really take sides, you know, like, who are we supposed to be cheering? I guess the Guns interrupting Max Caster's rap, probably strategically, was meant to be the moment that it was clear the Acclaimed are the good guys, because the Guns just broke up the rap, which people, I think, look forward to. But you can just absolutely interpret it the other way. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was, hey, the Guns saved us from Max Caster going on and on with some rap. And I just think it ended up being ambiguous, and fans, therefore, were ambivalent about the breakup. And I think also it was sort of fun seeing them together, and this feels a little rushed. So what are your thoughts, Tyler, in terms of how this played out? And do you disagree with my assessment that the crowd didn't really react to the breakup, where they were like, yay, finally we get to cheer these people and boo these two?
Yeah, so I do think the crowd was confused. I also think this was actually added last minute because AEW is very good at promoting every match that's going to be on the card, you know, usually days in advance. And this was not on the initial lineup of matches that I saw. And it was, you know, announced right after the Christian Matt Hardy segment that there was another match added. So I think not that, you know, there would have been a video package to explain what's going on, but it definitely felt like, hey, you guys, I mean, there was no match. I think even one of the bolder guys didn't even get tagged in. And it was just like, hey, you guys have 4 minutes, make this happen. And I think, you know, with, I guess, you know, Fighter Fest next week and what it is that it was Fighter Fest day one or week one or whatever, that there's maybe not an opportunity for this to end. And Tony wants to make the acclaimed baby faces now that Bowens is back, and he thought this was the best opportunity to kind of wedge it in, get it on national TV where a million people are watching it, and move on and make the acclaimed a mid-card baby face group that people can get behind was the goal. I mean, that's how I read it. I don't know if it's going to be totally successful with everyone watching in that way, but they might have to do maybe a package to clarify that. But it was successful for me, but I enjoy Caster and Bones, and I think both of them have a lot of potential as baby faces. So I think this kind of solidified that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't want to be in that joke role like they have been for too long, or else you'll be typecast in that. So.
Yeah, yep. Is there anything else from the show you want to bring up, Tyler?
I don't think so. I'm glad we brought up the announcers. That's one thing I definitely want to talk about.
How about Jake Hager and Claudio doing a program based on WWE backstory? I thought we'd get an email or a call on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think anything Jake Hager is kind of a black hole of content, unfortunately, of interest. So that's just my personal take. But, you know, I think getting Claudio a win on a guy who's significantly lower than him on the card is good. And I feel like he's, you know, presented in a way where I think the understanding is that most fans know who he is, as opposed to like Roosh as an example, and he's going to be at a higher spot on the card. And I guess the only interesting thing from
which
that
is accurate because Jake Hager wrestled in front of millions and millions of people and Roosh has not.
Yeah. You know, I think them even teasing like, you know, hey, you weren't a champion in WWE and you won't be here. My take was that I don't see Claudio as a world champion guy. I think, you know, he was in a good spot in WWE. I like, you know, Cesaro as a character a lot, but it kind of teased to me like maybe Tony thinks this guy can be world champion. I just like, it was kind of like, oh, let's put that in the back pocket and think about that later. And I don't know how I feel about it. So that was my only takeaway.
Yep. All right. Very good. Tyler, thank you so much. Everybody check Tyler out on our YouTube channel. Just search PW Torch and please subscribe and hit the thumbs up button and all the stuff that every YouTuber tells you to do. Do it for us too. It's good for the algorithm, good for us growing. And check out Tyler's reports covering Dynamite alongside mine every Wednesday night at pwtorch.com. And Tyler also covers Rampage at the VIP post show, so go VIP for that among many other reasons. pwtorch.com/goVIP. And as noted earlier, check out Factor Meals, go.factor75.com/Wade120. That's go.factor75.com/Wade120 and enter coupon code Wade120 to get $120 off. They are really, it's a really good food service and there's no work. You just punch a couple holes in the meal and microwave for 2 to 3 minutes. And it is a good meal that you can feel good about, give you energy. And lots of flavors and they just do a good job. I definitely endorse the product. So check it out and support our sponsors. Tyler, we will talk to you soon and it's been a pleasure catching up on AEW with you tonight.
Very good. Thank you for having me and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Sounds great. Thanks for our callers. Thanks for our emailers. Thanks to our listeners and we'll talk to you all next time.